Hi, this is Dean Koontz. Welcome to my podcast. As long as I've been on Earth, which is longer than Microsoft Word 5.0, but not longer than the English language, I've been involved in only two traffic accidents. They occurred a little more than a year apart, and the circumstances were eerily similar. I should not have survived either accident, and I certainly shouldn't have survived unscathed, but I did. In the first instance, my wife and I were in a large sedan, I won't name it, stopped at a controlled intersection on our way to dinner when a car hit us from behind. Police estimated the guy was going at 55 miles per hour without braking. The day, spring was approaching, and I'd taken the snow tires off the rear wheels and replaced them with springtime rubber. The snow tires had been stored temporarily in the trunk of the car until I could tuck them inside in a corner of the garage for use the next winter. When we were hit from behind, the stored tires were like two enormous shock absorbers. However, even with that protection they provided, the rear of the sedan was spectacularly crushed, compacted into about 2 feet of mangled ruins, and those ruins were shoved against our headrests. The back doors folded like accordions, and the front doors buckled and they wouldn't open, and the gasoline tank ruptured and sprayed fuel into the passenger's compartment. Not something you ever want to happen. Incredibly, the engine was still running, and I couldn't shut it off. I was expecting fire or explosion, and I needed perhaps a frantic half minute to wrench open a buckled door. Our sedan was totaled, but the car that hit us was totaled and squashed. We thought the driver of the other vehicle must have been dead, but to our amazement, he was hurt as we hurried to him. He struggled out of his demolished coupe. He was as unharmed as we were. As it turned out, he was a 16-year-old boy who had gotten his driver's license a month previous. He bought the first car, his first car, that morning. Regarding the wreckage with disgust, he looked at us and said, "I didn't need this." As though he suspected that we, unlike him, had been driving around with no sane purpose, but with the mad hope of being hit from behind and killed. We had just paid off our car that day. 14 months later, having moved 3,000 miles from Pennsylvania to California, we were stopped at a traffic light on our way to dinner. Going out to a restaurant is seldom viewed as a dangerous undertaking, but our experiences have proved it to be. When the car hit us from behind at, the police estimated, 55 miles per hour without braking, we took quite a jolt, but this time we were in a small sports car, which had no back seat, just a little luggage space. Because the Mercedes was solidly constructed and brilliantly engineered, the fuel tank didn't rupture, and the doors didn't buckle, and we got out of the vehicle unscathed. The car that had hit us was a large sedan. It looked as if it had been nuked. We were sure the occupant must be dead or maybe seriously injured, and we hurried to the driver's door. The window was broken out. The door had buckled. The woman inside was alive, but obviously intoxicated. When we told her to stay calm, that we'd get her out, she cursed us and said, "I didn't need this," putting the emphasis on the word need, precisely as that driver had done 14 months ago in Pennsylvania. I couldn't get her out of the car, and even the police, who arrived within a couple of minutes, had trouble extracting her. Not because she was pinned in the wreckage, but because she was determined to stay in there, and rather than get out and have to face a breathalyzer test. As it happened 14 months earlier in Pennsylvania, Gerda had made the final payment on our car loan that very morning. Gerda and I looked at each other and didn't really need to say anything. It was one of those moments where you know fate is at work. The uncanny similarity of the details of these two accidents suggested to me, as do many things in life, a world that operates not always according to the predictable laws of physics, but also and perhaps as often under the influence of a mysterious power with a delightfully Byzantine sense of story and with an agenda that is, though perhaps not inscrutable, challenging to understand and analyze. Pondering the significance of these two accidents, Gerd and I posited all sorts of possible meanings and messages to be derived from it. I thought it logical, for example, never to halt at another traffic light or stop sign, but to cruise blithely through the intersection with the expectation that to stop would be to invite an inevitable rear-end collision. Eventually, however, we made only one change in our lives due to those events at the opposite ends of the continent. Because we were finally able to afford to do so, we therefore never took out another car loan. We paid cash for each new vehicle we required. Granted, on any day that we paid for a new car, we assumed we were at risk till midnight, but when we made it through the witching hour, the suspense was over. One evening, a few years after the second of these two accidents, Gerd and I went to dinner with Dick and Ann Lehman. Dick Lehman is a writer. During his life, unfortunately, his books never sold particularly well in the U.S. They sold tremendously well in England. It's since his passing a number of years ago, he's had a renaissance here, and his books sell very well, and I am the literary executor for the estate. And it's just been a wonderful, fun thing to see this happen. But I'm back now when Dick was still alive. And we picked them up at their house and buzzed off on a glamorous Los Angeles night. You know, that you think it glitters with film stars and carjackers and movie moguls and diseased streetwalkers and pop music divas and bubbling urine-soaked hobos. But that's not really Los Angeles. We had reservations at a 16-star restaurant, outside which even the richest titans of industry wrestle in the street like hooligans trying to get a table. We were exuberant at the prospect of superb food, fine wine, and the chance to share a dozen of hilarious personal anecdotes about the subjects of publishing business and dental surgery, since we'd both recently had some. Nothing, we thought, could tint this spectacular evening, and then I missed our freeway exit. As a driver, one of my hallmarks is missing freeway exits, but only when chauffeuring particularly interesting and voluble people. Dick and Ann are interesting and voluble, and Gerda was probably over there preparing syringes of thorazines to calm us down. Anyway, as I regaled Dick and Ann with the story of our two nearly identical accidents 14 months apart as if by our freeway exit and passed another one before any of us realized that what I had done. After consultation, we agreed that by switching freeways, we could eventually get back around to where we needed to be. So I switched and switched again. And by some means that was mysterious to all of us, we found ourselves in what seemed to be an unopened section of an uncompleted freeway. And shortly thereafter, on a surface street in a neighborhood so grim and forbidding that even the attack-trained pit bulls ought to have been carrying semi-automatic pistols. We were familiar with the maze of streets and highways that formed the almost Gordian knot of Los Angeles, yet we were uncertain of our location and flummoxed as to how to find our way out of what seemed to be a vortex of terror. In a baffling and unconventional move, Gerda consulted a map. Women tend to do that. They think that's always the resolution, and men feel that it is never the resolution. Dick and I, for instance, voted for the sober and sensible approach of cruising at random into even meaner streets and hope we'd stumble upon a freeway sign before we were stabbed, dismembered, or set on fire. Naturally, as we are both writers and we've been born with a generous measure of imagination, we saw threats at every turn, which we excitedly pointed out to each other, and we were able to envision and vividly describe an endless series of hideous fates that might befall us before we found an escape. Anne, for reasons beyond my comprehension, chose to lean forward from the back seat and consult with Gerda as they studied the map. Anyway, by eventually executing a series of turns, Gerda suggested, based on, I suppose, her superior female intuition, we found its freeway and were able to arrive at dinner a little late, but with all our extremities intact. We had a fantastic dinner. It deserves 16 stars if it really only had four. And since I'd begun the evening by talking about our strangely two similar accidents at opposite ends of the continent, it's no surprise that when we came out of that restaurant and stepped onto the sidewalk, the valet parker returned our car with a deep crease along the passenger side from front fender to rear. And the valet parking attendant presenting the car to us said, "I didn't need this." I can remember Dick and I exchanged a look. Neither of us needed to say anything. The greatest problem for novelists is that reality isn't only stranger than fiction, but generally funny and more deeply disturbing. To get the true flavor of life, it seems to me a writer has to let his imagination cruise, not merely through the precincts of realism, where you might find Hemingway, but more important, also into neighborhoods of the fantastic. Dick and I are radically different writers, but what I loved about his work then and still do is his willingness to drive at high speed into the fantastic, make it seem, for all its flamboyant qualities, as real as tomorrow's newspaper. So I still have been only in two serious traffic accidents, but I've been in three instances where my car has been damaged by people who had the same final line. If you'd like to know more about my work and what readers think of it, why don't you join us at deankuntz.com, where we have lots of fun and lots of things to keep you occupied. And on November 27th, my new book, The Darkest Evening of the Year, will appear in bookstores. Thank you for listening.